morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the fourth quarter and year ended December 31st, 2014. Presenting for the company today will be Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer of Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp. Please go ahead, Mr. Nieboer.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending the call. Before we start, I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our Q4 MD&A, our Q4 press release, and our recently filed annual information form dated March 12, 2015. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for a description and definition of these, please see our fourth quarter MD&A. I think how we'll operate the call today is a little bit different than the past few. I'll start off with kind of reviewing 2014 results, and then Tom will get into the current state of the business and the go forward. So obviously for us, 2014 results reflect the very buoyant drilling market we all enjoyed in both Canada and the United States in 2014 and the continued growth of our J-Chem and PureChem businesses in the production and specialty chemical space. Gross revenue for full year 2014 was $972.7 million versus what was the top of our guidance of $965 million. EBITDAC for the full year 2014 was $177.2 million versus the top of our guidance of $178 million, so basically right on top of guidance. For Q4 in particular, gross revenue was $278.7 million versus Q4 2013 of $200.6 million for an increase of $78.1 million or 39%. EBITDAC for the fourth quarter was $47.6 million versus Q4 2013 of $36.5 million, an increase of $11.1 million or 30%. There were some effects to Q4 in particular with respect to a little bit of a drilling slowdown in response to the start of the lower oil price environment, as well as some price pressure starting to creep into the business and reflect of the current economic situation. In addition, we took some one-time charges in inventory and other provisions around receivables and liabilities reflective of the lower oil price environment. I'm very proud, obviously, of our 2014 results and all the hard work all our people and all the different divisions helped to create that outcome. But obviously, investors are most interested in the current business and the go forward. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Tom Simons, our CEO.
Thanks, Craig. Good morning, everyone. What I'd like to do this morning is give a succinct update on sort of current operations for our different business units: Canadian drilling fluids, U.S. drilling fluids, Canadian specialty production chemicals, U.S. the same, and I'll touch briefly on Clear and Equal. I would like to start by saying that we're very proud of 2014. We accomplished most of the goals that we set out for the company. All pieces of the business grew. We continue to create additional vertical integration in the business, which we think is going to pay us back in a down market. We'd like to thank our customers and very much our employees for a great job. I'll get into a current update of the business, and then I'd like to walk listeners through what our plan is for $50 oil. In the Canadian market for drilling fluids, the start of this week, we were running high 80s for jobs. We're already down to 50. So the impact of a very early and what we think will be protracted breakup is definitely on. AES, we went through 10% of the market. Today we have 117 jobs running. We're not sure where the U.S. market will bottom out. But we think that we're sort of beating the odds and that our customers are being slightly more active, and we have picked up some work through technology as the rig count has went down. PureChem in Canada, our specialty production chemical business, We expect 15 to be a year of growth over 14, and 14 was a brilliant year for PureChem. The reason that we're very busy in growing that business is twofold. We're bringing in the unique chemistries of JChem into the Canadian market, and probably just as importantly, we are being able to attract very high-end talent or people from industry as consolidation of our competitors occurs, and we create more of a sort of known brand in the Canadian market, and that our customers and people in the production chemical business can see that we're serious about it and are a player in this market. JChem had a fantastic year in 2014. We expect JChem to show modest growth in 15. We are succeeding in putting JChem chemistry in West Texas, expanding our Eagleford business, and our traditional oil markets continue to remain robust. As tough as it is on us as drilling people, the U.S. and Canada are growing oil production, and all of that production needs to be treated with chemistry. Clear had a good year in 14, but it is a tough market right now. Clear will remain profitable. It's a great complement to our drilling fluid business. We're trying to attract some talent to that market so that as industry turns in a year or two, we're there to be a leading supplier. Equal remains an important way for us to keep cost of goods down in Canada, and it does give us very modest profit, so we'll stay in that business. On to probably what the most important part of the call is, and that's what's our plan to run our business through $50 oil. Today, we're very pleased that the initiatives we started 4 years ago to enter the production chemical business and become a basic manufacturer, so to be vertically integrated in our chemistries, in our mine materials, that we're significantly along in those initiatives. We think that it's very important long-term, and especially with $50 oil, not to be a reseller of the consumable chemistry and mine materials that our business sells. The first thing we've done with our business to meet our strategy, and our strategy is we want to retain all of the accounts that we can remain profitable on. Our thinking is that if an operator's been running 5 rigs and they're going to 2, you want to be on location at the bottom so that as the industry comes back, whether it's in 1 or 2 years, and the operator looks to increase their program, that you're the people that have been there with them through the bottom. And we think naturally then you're going to have some uptick. It's going to be harder to get back into places that you've been on the outside looking in while it's been slow. With that in mind, the first thing we've done, and we started this in December and have done it through January, February, is we've reduced our prices to our customers. We think, running the business like a small business, we think our dispersed business model, where the business units have people over top of them that are ex-owners, have P&L responsibility, we think that's allowed us to act quickly and decisively and wisely to retain business. So we have went to customers and given them discounts that are reflective of lower oil prices. We understand that our customers are getting seriously pinched with this price. The second thing that we've done as a business is, unfortunately, we've had to reduce our headcount. We've been through this before. We went through it in 08, 09. The people running the business have been doing this for 20-plus years, so we've seen this before. We know what to do. So we've lowered headcounts in our drilling fluid groups in both Canada and the U.S. How we went about that is we've kept the people that have the broadest skills or kept young talent that we can see in 5 years can either be a source of technology or a source of revenue. We've also, unlike in past downturns as a company, had the ability to take drilling people and move them to our production side of our business, which is still growing and still needs people. So we've been able to move warehouse people, engineering people, and some field people, and sort of reset on how you compensate those people, but keep them inside of your organization and allow yourself to grow in other pieces of the business. The other thing that we've done as an austerity measure is we've significantly reduced variable compensation. We're doing that across the board in the company, but we are treating sort of the four different parts of our business. So Canadian drilling fluids, U.S. drilling fluids, Canadian specialty production chemicals, and U.S. specialty production chemicals distinctly and uniquely. We're trying to do the right things for those business units in their markets, and they're not all sort of one size fits all. We've in general created or implemented significant austerity measures that reflect the impact of $50 oil. Sort of a lighthearted example is you're not going to see our name around the Calgary Stampede a lot this year. We are obviously reducing inventory levels very significantly as a business. I'll remind listeners that what's going to happen in 15 for us financially will be the same as 09. Our receivables will be turned into cash, and the pile of inventory that ordinarily is constantly being replaced as we turn things 5 or 10 times a year is going to be a lot less. We're very carefully managing CapEx as well. As people saw in our release yesterday, we've got about $25 million of committed CapEx and about $25 million of discretionary. We are taking a long-term view to the business. We think that our cash or balance sheet position allows us to continue to take a long-term view to things. What we will spend money on in 15 is completing nitrile and hydrogenation expansion at JChem. We'll also complete our barite mill in Corpus Christi. We expect that mill to be live in August. We are actually physically under construction there. Additional CapEx sort of over the 25 that's committed, we need to see a clear sign or line of sight to new business or to have significant strategic long-term value to us. We are in this for the long term, so where appropriate, we're going to try and look at things in a down market. In general, we're staying focused on creating the best possible outcome for our customers. We think that we've beat bigger competitors by bringing technology to customers that saves time and money on drilling rigs. We've been able to create chemistry that improves results in horizontal fracs. The use of our unique chemistry, and very importantly, how our people apply it for the customer at the pump jacks on existing production. That's been, of course, a big part of our business, and we'll stay focused on that and obviously our chemistry to protect pipelines. We very much believe in the long-term viability of our business and our industry. We think that we've built a unique business really in two ways. We think that we've built a business that allows investors to invest in the energy space and services space in a business that isn't heavy in equipment, heavy in CapEx. We have beat bigger companies through bringing new technology and ideas to customers to become the leading independent North American drilling fluids company, and we think a serious player in the specialty and production chemical business. We've done it by being basic or vertically integrated, and we've done that ahead of some very large businesses. The second way that we think we're unique is that we built a business that did in 2014 almost $1 billion in sales with minimal required CapEx. We build consumable chemistry and we mill mine materials that we turn 5 to 10 times a year. This business is a business we started privately in 01. We think we understand how to either shrink or grow as opportunity and market conditions dictate. And while we think 15 will be a tough year for the industry, we think that we can quickly and successfully right-size our business and then double down on how we treat the customer on location in planning their wells, planning their production, so that we're the service company of choice on the work that they do have. I'm now going to turn it over to Craig to give sort of an update on our balance sheet and go forward financially for 2015, and then we'll open up the call to questions.
Thanks, Tom. As you would have noted in our release and in our MD&A, we have chosen not to provide specific guidance on revenue and EBITDA for 2015 in light of, you know, the ever-moving changes in activity, oil price, and uncertainty with that. We didn't feel that we could add a lot of value to the market by trying to take a shot at that. But wanted to, at this stage, to talk through the balance sheet and the obligations of the company in light of the current circumstances to give investors confidence that we do have a very sound financial plan through this lower oil price environment. The key financial commitments of the business outside of the operations, obviously for us, are the dividend, which is going to estimated at $72 million for the year, our interest charges, which are going to be about $25 million for the year, and obviously we have to continue to run the business, so the maintenance capex of $6 million. That totals $103 million of colleague commitments to be funded out of EBITDAC. If we look at the analyst estimates, the range is as low as 111, and the average is in the 140, 150 range. It would suggest that based on those numbers, our key commitments are all covered by EBITDAC. Obviously, cash taxes is another cash cost of the business. We have organized ourselves very tax efficiently, as the business will have some slowdown this year. Just speaking to the range of numbers that the analysts have put out, at $111 million of EBITDAC, if that, you know, were to be the case, our cash taxes this year would almost be zero. At $150 million of EBITDAC, based on our structuring and our business model, that cash taxes would be about 10. So you get a sense of the power of the tax planning that's been put in place in our business. Tom touched on the expansion capex. About 25, say, is committed, and so there's still flexibility with that. We decided in the MD&A to put in the number of 50 to give people a marker that is probably going to be the number we spend, because we do expect to find things that are strategically important to us that we can see ways to grow the business going forward, and with some hope that there is some turnaround in the industry as we approach the back half of the year. Speaking of balance sheet flexibility, I'll remind callers that in 2014, we advantageously took advantage of market conditions and termed out another $75 million worth of debt, putting our high-yield debt at $300 million. That's due in 2020, so we have lots of run room on that debt, and the cost of carrying that capital was included in the $25 million of interest costs for the year that I mentioned earlier. In addition, we had added $75 million worth of equity in 2014 as well. And in 2014, we upsized our operating line to $200 million, and we have a $100 million accordion on that line, of which today currently we are drawn $55 million. As Tom mentioned, a unique part of our business is the low capital intensity, but we do have a working capital intensity as we turn consumable chemicals into cash. Working capital, net working capital at December 31st of $300 million. Obviously, in a slowdown on the drilling side, just like in 09, as Tom mentions, we will be buying less inventory and AR will come back to the balance sheet as cash during the year. Obviously, if as we expect, the production, especially chemical business, grows, there will be a little bit of an offset there, as we will be adding working capital on that side of the business. I'll remind callers as well, in 09, when we were just a drilling fluids business, we were one of the very few trusts models at that time to be able to pay our distribution, and we had 122% payout ratio. But why we were able to do that was the accordion-like aspects of our business model. We had cash coming back to the balance sheet through that working capital. Based on those analyst estimates, on average, we're looking at a 70% plus or minus range of payout ratio for 2015. So obviously much, much stronger position on the balance sheet than we were in 09. Under all scenarios in 2015, we do not see any issues with our debt covenants, and we have lots of headroom. In addition to insulate ourselves on the working capital and receivable side, we made a decision in the last few weeks, and we have taken trade credit insurance over our U.S. receivables. Not that we thought there are any particular risks in those U.S. receivables greater than our Canadian receivables, but for those of you who are very familiar with the industry, the U.S. business is, you know, spread out in many different centers and many more customers versus the Canadian business, which is centered here essentially in Calgary. So our feeling was that that was good insurance to buy over a book of business that's harder for us to touch day-to-day ourselves personally. Obviously, another moving part for everyone's business these days is exchange rate. The continued Canadian dollar weakness is actually a big tailwind to our overall business, given how much of our earnings and revenue is generated in U.S. dollars, and the fact that some of those key obligations that I mentioned, including our debt, our interest, and our dividend, are denominated in Canadian dollars. That being said, it's been a big challenge for our Canadian business units who have significant input costs in U.S. dollar-denominated currency in an environment where it's very difficult to pass that price increase on to your customer. But net-net, that's a positive for us in this downturn, which also makes our business model, I think, somewhat unique to some of the peers in the Canadian public service company space. All in all, we feel that 2015 will be a challenging year. We think we're up to it. We think our people are up to it, and we're looking forward to working with our customers through this slower time and more difficult economic time and position our business in a way that it can take advantage of the next upturn. At this time, we would turn it over to callers for questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Jason Sawatsky with AltaCorp Capital. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Tom, just with respect to rationalizing costs, I'm just wondering if you're able to quantify maybe, you know, in terms of the headcount reductions. I know it's a sensitive topic, but are you able to quantify the headcount reductions, wage reductions, anything like that?
Well, I don't think I want to say what we've done on wages. I don't think that's fair to our people. What I will say is that our expectation is that drilling is off 40% in both the Canadian and U.S. market, and so okay, we've right-sized our field count to match that.
Okay. Okay, great. And then just on the price discounts that you mentioned, so did you guys give price discounts in both the drilling fluids and in production chemicals, or was it just the drilling fluids?
It's both, but it's more weighted to drilling. That's where there's been more pressure. I'll maybe try and describe what we've been able to do for customers, Jason, so that guys can compare that to the expectations they're hearing from the E&Ps that are on the street. A general drilling fluid invoice has two parts to it. One part is all the consumable materials, which is where we make money. We make those things and then obviously mix them every day into the mud tanks on the rig. That's about half of a typical drilling fluid invoice. The other half is inverter or base oil that comes from a refiner. It's largely a pass-through. Okay. We have come off in the range of 5% in general on the consumables. The base oil that makes up the other half of the invoice, that's market-based pricing. It lagged the drop in oil, but it's now down significantly. It's done the same thing as the fuel price you see at the pump. So when you mix those two together, on average, our customers have been able to see a 12 to 20% drop in their total drilling fluid invoice, and that is what the drilling people are being told to create by management. So we've been successful in staying on the accounts that we have and going about 5% on the consumables.
Okay, great. And then I would assume on the production chemical side, I mean, that's going to be less on the production chemicals for sure.
Well, the operator wants to pay less for everything, Jason.
Yeah.
So we've been able to move on that stuff and have where we have room. We think that sort of operating a mid-sized business like a small company still has allowed us to, you know quickly what guys' expectations are. And being a basic manufacturer, we are seeing some reduction in input pricing out of Kansas, and so you're able to certainly pass that along. But there's price, you know, expectations I think, on every service item that an E&P is buying today.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, great. And then just last question with respect to, maybe this is for Craig, but with respect to discretionary spending, I think you said 20 or 25 million. You know, just if we look at the production chemicals business, you are expecting year-over-year growth in that business. So would that suggest that there, you know, could be some areas within production chemicals that, you know, you could spend that 20 to 25 million?
I think there's lots of different things we're looking at, Jason. A lot of it is just in this environment. We may be going into new areas with a little more scaled down version of a yard and a ATCO trailer versus a yard and a new building type of approach, let's say, as opposed to we're not going to make investments where we see growth of being able to sell chemicals.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Steve Kammermayer with Claris Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, guys. Just a question on the expected growth here in the production and specialty chemicals. I'm wondering, is that growth predicated on upselling existing customers sort of to get the most out of their wells using more chemicals, or is the majority of that growth expected to come from signing up new customers, new regions like the oil sands, moving into more upstream or midstream markets as well?
A little bit of it, Steve, is that overall North American production is rising, so all of us in the business will track that. But the vast majority of it is growth at our competitors' expense. That's through technology like solid chemistry, through our corrosion inhibitor Supercore, and we're starting to see a pretty big amount of interest in stimulation chemistry where people can work over existing stuff and increase production volumes without having to spud a new well.
Are you seeing much more people looking at that stimulation chemistry as they pull back on the drilling side?
Yeah, we sure are. We've got an opportunity with a big independent in West Texas for Revive. You know, what we're telling our salespeople is this is, in our view, when the customer is going to look at new ideas. I don't think people will do things that are risky or unproven, but all of the operators more than ever need to stretch every cent they make. So if you can, you know, demonstrate to a customer that you've done something in an area that works, guys will listen and, you know, potentially give it a try.
Okay. And maybe just on the dividend here. So the payout ratio was 46% in 14. So presumably, like you said, that does go up in 2015. Is there a ratio that you're targeting over the long term for that? Or what sort of ratio, long-term ratio, would you start to get uncomfortable if we're in this environment, say, for 2015, 2016?
Well, Steve, this is Craig. So, you know, what we've said all along is as opposed to targeting a specific payout ratio, we've tried to run the business in the long term on a zero-sum game of EBITDA, less dividend, less interest, less maintenance capex, less cash taxes, and over the long term, less expansion capex is a zero-sum game. Obviously, as markets turn up and down, that expansion capex is something that, you know, might have to get funded out of our operating line to make it all go around in a slower year. But that's our long-term business model, and if you go back in history, you'll find that math has been pretty consistent. What that probably works out to, though, is a long-term payout ratio in that 70% range. And so, you know, that's by default becomes somewhat of a barometer, but we're not managing to that percentage. We're really managing, you know, can we fund the internal growth of the business model from the generated cash?
Great, thanks. That's all I had, guys.
Your next question comes from Dan McDonald with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just wondering if we look at the production chemicals business, have you seen any change in the rate of growth in the first quarter here to date when you look at kind of what the growth rates were in the fourth quarter, or has it held fairly constant?
Dan, it's Tom. The trajectories went down for sure. You know, there's a little top line pressure because you're charging less for something now than you were in November. And part of that business is us selling chemistry that operators use in their fracs. And as you and I have talked about, there's lots of wells being drilled that are not being completed yet. So some of that has come out. So the growth of the business is slower by quite a bit, but it is still going up. The growth rate of PureChem in Canada probably can be a little better than in the States just because we're so new here, and we've been very pleased with some of the personnel additions that we've been able to do over the winter. All the consolidation of competitors is having very experienced people in the field look around, and they're coming and they're bringing business.
Okay. And then on just on the acquisition side, guys, have you, you know, if you might kind of give us maybe an update on what you're seeing in that, is it still a bit too early to kind of see people start to capitulate and really what might be on the top of the wish list when you look at, you know, there's probably a lot of opportunities going to come available here in these kind of conditions.
It's Tom again, Dan. I mean, for us, M&A is different than an operator. We're not going to buy a business that has a bad balance sheet and has to give up. We're going to look at businesses that expand our technology, accelerate our growth into frac chemistry, pipeline chemistry, and revenue attached to those businesses. And then probably most importantly, will leadership and the people stay so that the book of business stays? So for us, it's a little different. I think what could make something go around in this down market is if you can get a business deal or sort of terms and price that you like with a business, this is when a vendor should look, in my mind, to transact, because they can step into a very successful business where the equity probably rises with commodity prices at some point in the future. So unless they want to get out of industry, they're going to have to wait for that anyways. So why not wait inside a public company where your equity can go up?
Okay, great. I'll turn it back over. Thanks, Tom.
Again, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Bhakti Pavani with Euro Pacific Capital. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. Just wanted to, you know, ask further into production and specialty chemical business. I know, Tom, you mentioned that you're expecting some kind of growth in the business. By any chance, would you be able to quantify that growth?
Bhakti, this is Craig. I mean, as per our disclosures, we're not giving guidance for the whole chemicals and drilling fluids segment that we report on for 2015. So obviously, we're not going to give any specific guidance on a sub-segment of that.
Okay. Never mind. Just another question. On the last call, you guys had mentioned that, you know, the JCAM products have been used for treatment of some section of the pipeline market. So just kind of curious, are you guys targeting any kind of midstream market, given that the upstream market, you know, currently is not performing well given the oil price environment? And what would be your strategy to play in the midstream market?
What we've done is build a team of people with technical expertise around asset integrity in the midstream market. We've run customer schools to talk about the ways that those assets can be compromised, and then the ways that you can use our unique chemistries, both supercore and solid chemistry, to basically protect those assets in ways that are economic and make sense for the midstream operator. So that's a part of the business that we think is very long term, it's recurring, and we have lots of capacity in our manufacturing facilities to make those consumables.
Okay. Also, you know, the Canadian Energy Services business is quite diversified across different basins. You guys are in Permian, Marcellus. Just from the beginning of the year to date, what areas have been the most affected or you have seen the most fall in the business, given the rig count coming down?
We've certainly seen West Texas come off. We have seen MidCon in the U.S. come off. We're actually up year over year in the Northeast U.S. We're maybe flat in the Eagle Ford. In Canada, the Deep Basin has come off a bit, but we're very active in that market. We've got some unique technology that our customers verify saves a lot of money, and we're very dominant in the SAGD market in 14. We expect that will be a slower market in 15, but we're very confident long term that that's a place that a lot of money's going to go, and we have the lion's share of the work through performance in that market.
Okay, thank you. Just another question, the Bright facility. I know on the last call you mentioned that there was a 3 to 6 month of the delay because of certain issues, and now the mill is expected to go online in August. So just kind of curious, is there, are the issues solved, or is there any kind of new thing happening there?
Well, unfortunately, the delay was about 18 months, and the facility is under construction, and buildings are being erected, and we're confident that we're crushing our own ore or barite by fall.
Okay, the last question. In the press release, it was mentioned that all the acquisitions need to comply with the stringent financial and operating metrics. Just kind of curious, does any of the acquisitions that you have made at this point are kind of not meeting those guidelines?
All of our acquisitions in our minds have been quite positive. We have some earnout payable on our balance sheet for the current year based on those acquisitions achieving their targets, and they're going to achieve their targets in our minds at this time, and that's why we've recognized that liability.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you very much, guys.
Your next question comes from Greg Coleman with National Bank Financial. Your line is open.
Gentlemen, thanks. A lot of my questions are already answered, but I do have just one quick one here, and I want to apologize because I missed the first part of the presentation, and so if this has already been said, then just please refer me to the transcript. But regarding your change in working capital, the working capital harvest that you tend to get because of the structure of the business, in prior years when we've seen a downturn in activity, the magnitude of the cash flow from operations excluding your working capital change and the cash flow generated from working capital change tend to be similar to each other in a sense that it's not as though one is materially larger. And just the example I'm going to pull is, you know, in 2009, you generated about $10 million for cash flow from ops and about $10 million from working capital harvest. In 2012, $50 million in cash flow from operations and $40 million in working capital harvest. Not getting into specific numbers, but because of the change in the addition of JKM and the production fluids business, in this downturn, would we expect them to be similar in size to each other, or is the nature of the business changed that the working capital harvest will be materially larger or materially smaller than the cash flow from operations?
Greg, that's an excellent question. I'll do my best to give you some guidance around how that might work. I mean, it's a lot of moving parts, and what you highlighted is exactly the biggest difference is that, you know, in 09, there was no production chemical business. In 12, there was a very small production chemical business burgeoning in Canada, and now we have a very robust production chemical business on both sides of the border that will grow in 2015. So you have part of the business that will be growing and adding working capital to it. The other difference, I think, between definitely 09 and now is that we have vastly improved the vertical integration of our business. which has allowed us to control IP, has allowed us to reduce input costs, allowed us to not be a reseller. But obviously that tail of buying raw products, manufacturing them into finished products, putting them into warehouses, and then putting them down whole is a longer road than buying from wholesalers and mixing it down whole. So net-net, it's definitely not going to be the ratio of 09. You saw a change to the ratio in 12. There would be a continued change, in my mind, in this environment based on those factors that I just talked about. Can I estimate that off the top of my head? No, but, you know, it's probably closer to a 50% range, you know, if you want to take a, you know, a barometer on it.
That's great color, Craig. That's exactly what I was looking for. That's all I need.
Again, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Elias Foscolos with Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Good morning. I just wanted to follow up on the deferred consideration that you kind of answered. I believe in Q4, the current and long-term portion of deferred consideration is about $29 million, and in Q3 it was about $39 or $40 million. Is that reduction due to payout?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. We have yet to have an experience in our history where we haven't paid out our earnouts, so that's a great credit to the people we brought into our business.
Okay, thanks. The last one is Reotech. I'm trying to understand if Reotech is classified as sort of a drill bit or a chemical acquisition. In other words, really what it breaks down to is when you talk about market share of Canadian drilling fluids, are you including the revenue from Reotech in there or are
yes.
you not? Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Reotech was a drilling fluids business.
Okay. That's all that I have for questions. Thanks.
There are no further questions in queue at this time. I turn the call back to Mr. Tom Simons for any closing comments.
Well, we'd like to thank listeners for their time. We'd like to assure listeners that we think we understand what needs to be done to take the company through $50 oil. We need to stay on the work that we have. We need to be where the customer needs us to be so that we're the preferred vendor. We think that isn't just about price. We think it's significantly about technology that lowers days, at the drill bit that lowers costs, that improves frac performance, that allows wells to keep producing and not go down by applying the right chemistry properly during production and by working with midstream companies to protect their assets. We like the team that we've built. We like the balance sheet that we've built and protected. And we very much like that we're a vertically integrated business in a very tough market. We think that as operators rationalize their service providers through this time, that as the industry comes out of this, we're going to be a relevant player in the business and be able to appropriately go up as the market allows. We appreciate your time. I want to say thanks to our customers for their work. And thank you very much to our employees for what they do. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.